Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Symphony Orchestra performs two works by French composer Camille Saint-Saëns in their Audience Choice Concert tomorrow evening at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. The program will feature the popular Carnival of the Animals and the Mozart Concerto for Two Pianos with guest pianists Christina and Michelle Naughton, as well as the Symphony No. 3 of Saint-Saëns. My guest today is guest conductor Sarah Ioannidis, who is the music director designate of the Tacoma Symphony, as well as the Spartanburg Philharmonic. The Australian-born, European-trained young conductor is part of a new wave of female conductors and has worked with orchestras on five continents. Ioannidis has also worked extensively with composer-conductor Tan Dunn on his huge multimedia projects and has created multimedia performances of Holst's The Planets and Steve Reich's Desert Music as well. She'll be leading the TSO this Saturday night, but before we speak with her, let's hear some music to be played. The featured work, Saint-Saëns' Organ Symphony, is known even to non-concert goers for its use in the film Babe. Here's one of the more sublime moments in the symphony. That's music from Saint-Saëns' Organ Symphony, the Symphony No. 3, the featured work for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra this Saturday night at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Guest conductor Sarah Ioannidis is our guest today. Sarah Ioannidis, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. Glad to be here.
This program is the Audience Choice Program, and it's kind of an interesting program because you have these two works by Saint-Saëns, but you also have two works for two pianos, which is sort of an unusual concert. You know, that's not unheard of, but having two concert pianists as the guest is a little bit unusual. And then you have the Mozart Concerto for Two Pianos. What do you like about this particular program?
First of all, Saint-Saëns, for me, is one of the greatest French composers. He was really an epic composer that had such a big influence, a wide-stretching influence. And, you know, he lived to be 89 years. And in that time, he wrote pretty much every kind of genre of music out there. Everything from, the Swan, those Carnival of the Animal pieces were not even published during his lifetime, but, he was an extremely busy output as a composer of opera and symphonies, and, he was really one of the greatest, I think, primarily 19th century composers.
And he also had this great influence over French music, too, at his role at the conservatory.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
And in fact... what we think of as the great 20th century French music was sort of rebelling against that overarching influence.
Yeah, he broke a lot of new ground and paved the way, for Impressionism and a great wave of early 20th century composers to sort of come out of the Paris Conservatoire and, make their influence even greater.
These are the two works that you're most likely to hear by Saint-Saëns. Maybe one of the piano concertos is too, but he wrote so much music. Why do you suppose it's not played as much?
Good question. I think of it as played fairly substantially, and so maybe in some parts of the world it's played more than others, perhaps in Europe, where I'm from. So certainly the music of Saint-Saëns is very melodic. It's very approachable. There's absolutely no reason why it shouldn't be played more and more, and especially some of the more unknown works and, Africa for piano and, a lot of beautiful pieces. But this organ symphony in particular is played so much because it is one of the great epic symphonies out there to come out of, 19th century France. And It also breaks ground in the fact that it gets rid of some of the staidness of a symphonic piece. It doesn't have movements as such. Everything is interlinked, interconnected. It flows from one movement or one style of feeling and intensity to another directly. And it was written for Liszt because he was one of his heroes as an organist.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the nice thing about the organ symphony is it is, I always think of it as like two very loud, exciting parts with this sort of lush, beautiful, beautiful melody in the middle with a beautiful trombone and clarinet solo in the middle. And it's sort of unlike any other symphony written at that particular time.
That's right. And for him, it was the pinnacle of his work.
How do you approach conducting that particular work? Is there something you particularly try to emphasize in the organ symphony?
Well, I try to get as close to the music as possible. It makes such a strong, bold statement in its own right that, you know, my job is really to unify everybody's thoughts into one crystallized vision of what Saint-Saëns wanted out of the piece. And that comes from, you know, every person on the stage there making that happen. So I believe that this is one of the greatest pieces written, and I think it's fantastic that we get to perform it here in Tulsa, and it's the audience choice piece, and that I'm here to conduct it with the orchestra, and I hope that we bring to it something really unique and special to the audience that night, because every performance is different.
Yeah. Now, in contrast, you have another work by Saint-Saëns, The Carnival of the Animals, which uses the two pianos, but really it's not a concerto work. It's just a tour de force for the whole orchestra, from the beautiful swan movement to fossils, which feature both the pianist and your percussion section. It's like everybody has a moment in this particular piece.
Yes, it's a lot of fun. And in fact, Saint-Saëns himself said, you know, I'm having way too much fun doing this. And by the way, it was not to be published during his lifetime because he didn't want to be seen as sort of this jokey, light-hearted composer. You know, he was worried about that affecting his serious works. And here we are, have them on the same program. But we are also doing something unique, and that is to add poetry of the students to be narrated along with the Ogden Nash poems. So that brings in another aspect that I like about Saint-Saëns, is the fact that he was multi-talented artistically. You know, he was a playwright. He wrote, and you know, he had a variety, sort of typical romantic artist that not only was a composer and a pianist and an organist, but also wrote.
Now, you're going to be using verses, so probably the most popular are the Ogden Nash verses. Is that what we're going to use as a text?
You're going to do a mix. That's right. We're going to do both the Ogden Nash and also poems that were written very recently by students from Kendall Whittier Elementary School. And in fact, we gave two performances to the entire school with those poems. And they're written by, you know, pre-K right through third grade, I think. And they're really, really colorful, really fantastic. So it'll be wonderful to mix that with the Nash and then play the movements.
That's nice. That's very nice. You're working with two soloists in the case of Christina and Michelle Naughton. Is there anything different about working with two soloists like that together? Like if you're doing a double concerto as opposed to like either a violin or a piano concerto, or in this case, a concerto for two pianos in the Mozart. Is there anything different you do as a conductor to prepare for that?
I don't prepare any differently. I mean, for me, preparation is about learning, you know, the music and looking into the structure of the piece and the interpretation and the dynamics and the instrumentation and all of that. So for me, I've done a number of double concertos, triple concertos, even quadruple concertos, with string quartet concertos with symphony. And it's a lot of fun because you bring in more angles of artistry and personality, and you have to keep your eyes in more different places. So that's being in the moment in many different places. It's just sort of adding to the complexity and interest of the work to have two soloists.
Yeah. Any thoughts about the Mozart double piano concerto?
So the Mozart the Mozart Concerto for Two Pianos is a very sort of stately and elegant work. And in a way, it paves the way. It's an advanced composition, and it paves the way for composers like Beethoven. It's very Beethovenian in a way. It has a number of different melodic elements that were all interconnected, interrelated. It also has, like, Beethoven 5, the ba-ba-ba-ba, you know, the sort of fermata effect. And it has a very charming, you know, second movement. And the third movement is light and playful and just extremely charming. I like the first movement in particular because of its journey through the different themes and how it strings it together through the piano and how it uses the orchestra to sort of supplement. And later on, Mozart added clarinets and trumpets and timpani, and we'll be doing that version where he added those additional instruments to the orchestra.
Yeah, well, let's hear a little bit of that. This is music from the Concerto for Two Pianos, one of the works to be conducted by my guest today, Sarah Ioannidis, who is the newly named music director for the Tacoma Symphony Orchestra. She'll be starting there in this summer. And also the Spartanburg Philharmonic. She is the guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra's Audience Choice Concert this Saturday night at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Here's some music by Mozart. That's music that will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra, and my guest today from the Concerto for Two Pianos by Mozart. My guest is Sarah Ioannidis, who is guest conducting this concert. Now, a question I often like to ask about conductors is, you know, how did you get to the podium? And for some, it's the apprenticeship path through the opera house, where you start out as a rehearsal pianist, then you become a vocal coach, and then you get in front of an opera orchestra, and then from there out. And then the others, you are an orchestral player who basically says, you know, I can do this, and go back and get the study and eventually become a conductor that way. Your path seemed to be somewhat preordained. Your father is a conductor, and I guess you started your studies pretty early.
That's right. And I suppose I started them as a very young child, listening to a lot of classical music. And even my mother was singing in the choir that my father conducted. And so I'm sure I got a taste of music at a very early age and inherited some genes. In fact, my family does go back to the Nani family from the 18th century. A long string of violinists and conductors and composers. So my father is now a composer, but he didn't start out as a musician. He was a scientist, and he turned back to music later on in his life, in his 30s, and moved to Germany, where I had the opportunity to go and visit him, where he was working in the opera house as a pianist, just like you describe. And it was when I was a late teenager, after spending most of my growing years playing as many instruments as I could sort of lay my hands on, violin, piano, French horn, and other auxiliary instruments too, I thought, I like this. I like the theater. I like the opera. I loved playing in youth orchestra. I played in youth orchestra for over 10 years. And then eventually the light bulb went off, and it was clear to me that, hey, you know, put together violin, piano, French horn, and some of the studies and observation I had of my father, conducting would be a good thing for me to try. So that's how I started.
And was he your first teacher as far as conducting?
He was one of my first teachers.
I would imagine. I come from a musical family too, and studying with a close relative can be a little fraught with problems because there's a lot more than just the teacher pupil relationship going on. Did you find that in your own life?
Well, it was a bit different for me because I didn't live with my father. He was living in a different country, and so I got to see him once a year. So, you know, that was kind of turned the tables, and it was like, can't wait to get to Daddy and ask him a few questions, you know, and go through a couple of scores. And, you know, it was just sort of a wonderful golden opportunity for me. And then I sort of would go back home and just get on with it and do what I could and find other teachers.
Yeah. And you have certainly done that. You went to Oxford. You went to Guildhall. You did a postgraduate work at Curtis with Otto Werner Mueller, and then to Cincinnati Symphony, which is, of course, has this great track record of turning out conductor after conductor.
And Juilliard in between.
Yeah, and Juilliard in between. Then you got your own orchestras pretty quick. I mean, really, considering they're two smaller orchestras. But was there something good about starting out with that smaller orchestra like that? I mean, you're guest conducting with large orchestras and some of the greatest orchestras in the world. But having that as your music directorship, as you, you're not honing your craft, but you're perfecting your craft, I guess, probably.
Well, absolutely. And it's for me, I always wanted to take the slow and steady road. You know, I when I was in National Youth Orchestra, Daniel Harding was in the back of the trumpet section, and I looked over at him, and he was already, you know, studying with Simon Rattle. I said, hey, you know, I'm never going to be like that, but I'll do it my own way. And certainly I knew of the challenges of a conducting career and wanted to take the slow and steady route and make sure each step was laid, the ground was laid carefully and manageably for me.
And now you have this new job that you'll be starting in Tacoma. What's exciting about the Tacoma Symphony?
Well, it's a fantastic orchestra. They are very close to Seattle. It's a Pacific Northwest is a region which I haven't spent time in before. So I'm looking forward to that and to working with these musicians. I really think the orchestra is looking at a lot of new ways to remodel itself, change itself. And I feel that, with the background and experimentation I've done in various places, I think this is a good fit for me.
You have done a lot of experimental works. You've had this long collaboration with Tan Dunn where you're working as a production coordinator in these multimedia performances. Do you think this is an important part of the future of the symphony orchestra?
I think it's a part. How important it is, I think, remains to be seen. It remains to be tried and tested. And for those works, which are so unique and so uniquely created by somebody such as Tan Dunn, to have a life beyond the composer itself conducting and directing them is complicated. These are challenging works and expensive to put on. And
give us a sense of some of the things you've worked on and you know, how, you know, you have light shows, you have film, you have multimedia, you have just about every sort of form of modern entertainment on the stage while the orchestra and sometimes chorus are performing.
That's right. I mean, essentially the music exists within a whole platform of theatrical collaboration that has come also from the composer, what it looks like, what it feels like to be in the hall, everything from the lighting to camera action. You know, I've worked with, you know, film designers who are working live with cameras themselves and floaty pieces of silk in a bowl of water to create something very, very beautiful and sensual on top of the music. So I have really enjoyed that experience and even recreated my own multimedia performances, and I hope to be able to do more of that. But I want it to be, in a way, a new sort of art form of symphonic music that doesn't compete or doesn't take away. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily slap all that on a Mozart or a Beethoven symphony, but it exists in its own right. And, you know, sometimes it's very beautiful to put photographs of, you know, the composer's homeland and things like that, multimedia shows with a piece. It draws one into it. You get to know more about the context of the music. But I think we have to guard against music being overwhelmed by the multimedia of the day, because we still want to be able to feel the music directly touch us without even having to open our eyes and follow the path.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, a Mozart, Beethoven symphony, even a Brahms symphony, these are absolute music. And they really should, they were written to be experienced in one particular way, and that's probably the best way to experience them. But I want to talk about some of your multimedia works. You did a wonderful multimedia performance of The Planets. Here is very descriptive music, you know, Mars, Venus, every
right.
planet.
Yeah.
It lends itself to a multimedia performance.
Yeah, and we took it one step further, and we took the latest NASA footage of the universe. Because, you know, after seeing, like, a planet turning for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes,
yeah,
you know, you don't necessarily need to see six or seven or eight of them. So we took it further into the Hubble Bubble sort of latest footage, video as well as photographs. And I worked together with a film composer in El Paso to come up and design footage that would be for the movements that NASA hadn't already created from the images of the planets. And mm-hmm. it really made a wonderful experience for everybody.
And I think, you know, you also, another multimedia piece was involved with Steve Reich's Desert Music. And so you actually helped or worked with a filmmaker
who
right. created a film for, I mean,
yeah.
basically you took the music and then made a film to
yeah.
the music.
Yeah, and it absolutely was coherently integrated with the music, so it was all structuralized, and the piece itself is this kind of a mirror image of itself, and so we sectionalized it and timed it and created footage that would be very balanced from one side to the other and also very contrasting, and it used the footage of the local scenery, the deserts of El Paso, to be the beauty behind the images and behind the music there.
Of course, that's flipping film scoring completely on its head, too, because, you know, the film comes first, scoring comes
second. And that's another art form itself.
Yes, it is. You've been involved with that, too. Isn't there been a filmmaker that you've worked with?
Yes, I've worked a lot with Dario Marianelli.
Mm-hmm.
He's the composer of Pride and Prejudice and Atonement, which won an Academy Award. And in fact, next week we're going to do the U.S. premiere of the Anna Karenina Suite in Spartanburg.
Mm-hmm.
By him.
And that's from the recent film?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Well, that's great. My guest today is Sarah Ioannidis, a guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra. The Audience Choice Concert takes place Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, performing the Saint-Saëns Symphony No. 3, the Organ Symphony, along with the Carnival of the Animals and Mozart's Concerto for Two Pianos, which will feature Christina and Michelle Naughton. Now, have you worked with the Naughtons before?
No, I haven't, and I'm really looking forward to it. You know, the funny thing is, you know, they are twins, and I have twins. So
that's right.
Yeah, but I didn't expect to be conducting twins. So this is wonderful. I'm looking forward to it.
I would think that would be an interesting experience, having twins like that, because, you know, you see, you know, they're so much alike, and yet they have their own distinct personality, and it's probably a great experience.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, we wish you great success with the performance this weekend and also with your continuing work in Spartanburg and now in Tacoma. Let's talk a little bit about Tacoma, if we can, in our last couple of minutes. You're taking over a new orchestra. As a music director, what are the things you want to work out with the orchestra in your first year? You've already been introduced to them because you've conducted them in the course of getting the position. You've gotten to know them through the interview process, but now it's a different thing. You're the leader of these musicians, and you know, what are the things you have to set out as you take over an orchestra as a music director?
I mean, I think the first thing is really to get to know everybody, get to know them as musicians, as people, get to know the community, to see what the city wants from its symphony, see what's going to respond, to bring my artistic creativity and as many of their wisdom about and history about the orchestra, and try to create a vision that is the right one for Tacoma. And that will be a continual work in process whilst I lead up the orchestra. And we've already gone way into the planning for next season. In fact, they'll probably go to renewals, launch those in a couple of weeks. And so it's at the moment, it's an exciting balance of doing works that have never been done before, and also drawing an audience with some wonderful classics that also haven't been done, at least not for the last 10 years, and also bringing some really new, exciting projects and making the season as balanced and as full of variety and as interesting to as many people as possible.
Now, you've done multimedia productions in most of your other orchestras. Is that something that's always going to be a part of your work as a music director wherever you are, you think?
I'd like it to be. Yeah. I hope so.
And I know you've championed new music. This is something, when you look at your resume, I mean, that's a sort of a big part of who you are as a conductor, is championing new music. Is the reception towards new music, you know, that's something Tacoma was looking for when they asked you to be the music director, you think?
I think they're open. They're uh-huh. open to what I bring. And I try to look at music, new music, as something that is vibrant and exciting and not scary, and try to choose. I'm very, very careful about what I choose to program and how I choose to program it, and also how I introduce it. So, you know, bringing a composer to talk to the audience, or bringing them through a sort of videos multicast, what's the word, simulator,
yeah.
Bringing the composer's face and personality to explain, you know, the meaning of it. It's really a sort of educational process for people to accept what is new and what's good about something. And you know, I think in this day and age, we have to fight so much harder than the composers who were there in their day and age, pioneer, you know, promoting their own music. Now, you know, you have all the middleman and, you know, the publishers and this and that. But essentially, you know, you've got to bring the people who wrote it as close as you can to the performance to represent it. And that's also what I try to do, is I try to bring that aspect of it and help people understand the motivation and the meaningfulness behind it, and just remind them that, you know, not everything was liked in its time of Beethoven.
Or Stravinsky.
Exactly, exactly.
No riots at the concert hall these days.
That's right. So I don't try to force too much, you know, new music on people, but I try to find pieces that I really think are fabulous and try to balance them.
And there is a lot of great, there's an awful lot of great music out there today, and I think that idea of new music suffers from, say, 40 to 50 years ago, when an academic atmosphere sort of pervaded the concert hall in new music. And I think there's still some bit of fallout from that. Well, you know, where people were not writing, they were writing theoretically rather than for an audience.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, we wish you great success with that. Hope you have a great concert this weekend. It should be an excellent concert with beautiful music by Saint-Saëns and Mozart. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Guest conductor Sarah Ian Eady speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She'll be leading the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra in the Audience Choice Concert tomorrow evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. For information, visit tulsasymphony.org. Well, Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. We're going to leave you with music from Carnival of the Animals. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.